thank you, Blessing Njonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Thursday, September 18th, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sandra Nyaira.
And I'm Chris Gande.
Here are our top stories this evening.
The European Court of Justice throws out a complaint by former Deputy Minister and businessman Agai Georgias against the European Union targeted sanctions.
A top official of the MDCT is confirmed as one of the more than 80 people who died when a hostel of the Synagogue Church of All Nations led by TB Joshua collapsed in Nigeria.
And vendors say local authorities should stop targeting them as they struggle to make ends meet.
The European Court of Justice today rejected the complaint by former Deputy Minister and businessman Agai Georgias, who was placed on the EU targeted sanctions list before being briefly detained and deported at a British airport in 2007. The ruling comes ahead of another high-profile case before the same court, brought by Prosecutor General Johannes Toumana, also challenging the legality of the sanctions imposed on President Robert Mugabe and members of his inner circle by the European Union in 2002. But senior officials in the Prosecutor General's office told Studio 7 that they remain confident that the court will rule in their favor. The office says it provided the court with compelling evidence against the sanctions. Toumana's line of argument was that sanctions violate the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. The judgment in this case is expected any time this month. The EU imposed an asset freeze and travel ban on Guy Georgias, a former owner of Trinity Engineering, in April 2007 after he was appointed Deputy Minister of Economic Development. The sanctions against him were only lifted in 2011.
Georgias filed the case demanding compensation for his detention in the UK. He argued that his health had suffered under the stress caused by the sanctions. He sought a repayment for medical bills, legal fees, and business losses suffered by his companies. His British lawyer, Hugh Messer, said the sanctions on Zimbabwe were not dissimilar to U.S. action at Guantanamo Bay in Cuba, where the Central Intelligence Agency, or CIA, is alleged to torture prisoners of war. The EU top court found that the reasons for the sanctions on any member of the Zimbabwean government at the time were valid, saying, quote, A person who wished to participate in the democratic mechanisms of his country ought not to become a member of a government responsible for serious human rights violations, unquote. In addition, they said the decision to detain Georgias at Heathrow Airport had been taken by British authorities and therefore any claim for damages must be handled by them. Efforts to get a comment from Georgias were futile. Human rights lawyer Jeremiah Bamu tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that he is not surprised by the ruling.
I will respect the judgment of the court, as people normally say. I think the court would have made a careful deliberation of all the issues before it and would have come to a correct conclusion based on the facts that were presented. It would have been quite remiss for the court to have issued a contrary judgment to what it has done today, considering that Mr. Georgias himself has been fingered in part of the violations that led to the sanctions being put in place. So it would have been an issue of a perpetrator going to court to seek the court to allow him to continue perpetrating violations of human rights. It would not have been in line with the tenets of justice.
The Attorney General has filed another lawsuit challenging the imposition of sanctions. Is it not going to be affected by this ruling somehow?
Most likely it will be affected because it is the same court and it is not usual for the court to change or to depart from their earlier rulings unless there are compelling circumstances.
That was lawyer Jeremiah Bamu of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
A top official of the MDCT has been confirmed as one of the more than 80 people who died when a hostel of the Synagogue Church of All Nations collapsed in Nigeria on Thursday in as yet unexplained circumstances. The family of Mashonaland West Provincial Chairman Greenwich Ndanga today confirmed that he died after the six-story building crumbled to the ground on Friday. More than 130 people were rescued from the rubble. South African President Jacob Zuma yesterday said 67 of the dead were South Africans. Mr. Zuma has sent an emergency rescue team to Lagos. Leader of the church, T.B. Joshua, told his congregation that a mysterious plane was seen hovering above the building moments before the building collapsed. However, Nigerian officials say the building collapsed because of structural defects owing to the construction of an additional four stories.
Zimbabwe's Foreign Affairs Permanent Secretary Joy Bima said it's not yet clear if more Zimbabweans could have died or survived the crash, as they are still waiting for a report from the country's embassy in Lagos. Minister of Health David Barirenyatwa recently warned Zimbabweans to reduce travel to Nigeria, which has reported two cases of Ebola. He said at least 20 Zimbabweans visit Nigeria every week. The MDCT Provincial Secretary for Parliamentary Affairs, Stuart Garadi, told Studio 7 that they were waiting to hear about the repatriation of Ndanga's body so funeral arrangements can be made.
The news is just flickering this morning, and I couldn't believe it at first because it was just a rumor when somebody was saying you find the message on the internet. And the news was that corruption business, the building in Nigeria.
So can you give us just your expressions as a party, as someone who worked with him, how he was, what type of man he was?
He was a very good, very humble man, with social understanding, with no problem working with Ndanga. He was a good and educated person, so there was no problem. I experienced from his character, he was a very good and humble man.
Do you have an idea how many children he leaves behind?
I'm not quite sure. I don't have any idea of how many children that he has. But I know that he is an old man with some kids. He's a family man.
That was Chinoy MDCT Provincial Secretary for Parliamentary Affairs Stuart Garadi speaking to Studio 7 from Chinoy.
Meanwhile, Parirenyatwa Group of Hospitals has issued a statement dispelling rumors that there is a patient, an Ebola patient at Parirenyatwa Hospital. The statement says, be assured that the hospital did not at any time detect any Ebola cases. Patients are screened in line with the set protocol of the Ministry of Health and Child Welfare regarding Ebola virus diseases. Tents have been availed to screen patients before they are attended to at the Accident and Emergency Department and Outpatients Department, respectively. If any suspect cases are identified, the statement says, they will be transferred to an isolation center at Wilkins Infectious Diseases Hospital. The hospital continues that a patient who caused an alarm was brought by an ambulance and he was examined by two doctors with special training in Ebola case detection. The two doctors were satisfied that the patient was not an Ebola case, and the wife who had brought her husband and has a history of traveling to the Democratic Republic of Congo had exceeded the Ebola incubation period of 21 days since she arrived back in the country on the 18th of August 2014. She exhibited no symptoms of the disease, and the husband did not have any history of traveling to any of the affected countries. That was Chris, a statement from the Ministry of Health on the Ebola virus, but they are still urging people to be vigilant.
Transport Minister Obete Mpofu says plans are underway to disperse money collected from toll gates monthly to all provinces to enable timeous rehabilitation and construction of roads amidst plans to build 30 more toll gates throughout the country to boost the financing of these road projects. The Zimbabwe National Roads Administration, ZINARA, which is administering the fund, says it is currently collecting $3 million monthly from the existing 20 toll gates, the amount which it argues is not enough to fully rehabilitate the roads. Mpofu tells reporter Standigile Mhlanga his ministry will also release frequent reports on the amounts collected and the disbursements of the funds to the public, and he urged motorists to support the initiative.
Cabinet decided that we increase the number of toll plazas, you know, throughout the country towards, you know, that process of rehabilitation of our road infrastructure. And we feel that is the way to go, and the collections so far are not adequate. So it is for that reason that we are contemplating increasing the number of toll gates to allow for more interventions towards the rural district authorities, including even the urban authorities. So it's a program which we feel will allow for some improvement on our infrastructure. I mean, if we were to go for BOTs or PPPs, the ultimate payer towards those arrangements would be the motorist. So we want to affect the country's road infrastructure. We are doing this in consultation with all stakeholders, and there's quite some support towards that initiative.
And that was Transport Minister Obet Mpofu on the line with Studio 7 from Bulawayo.
The Minister of State for Manicaland Province, Christopher Mshowe, yesterday warned villagers in Chipinge not to disrupt the operations of the few remaining white farmers in the province, saying this could have disastrous repercussions on Zimbabwe's already fragile economy. But he also warned the remaining white commercial farmers that they would be kicked out of their farms if they refuse to cooperate with the new order and assist the new black farmers with knowledge and technical assistance. Lloyd Amoyo has details of from Chipinge.
Mshowe, who was guest of honor at a field day organized by banana producing company Matanuska at Chibuwe and Mtema irrigation schemes in Chipinge, said government wants the few remaining white commercial farmers to work closely with resettled farmers and engage them on outgrower programs. He said he was impressed by Matanuska project because villagers will be able to produce and export their produce to foreign markets. Mshowe said commercial farmers should back the government's empowerment initiatives through supporting their neighboring black peasant farmers with knowledge and finance. The remaining white commercial farmers who are into timber, potato, seed and dairy production, he said, must not be disturbed. Mshowe added the country cannot continue to import milk from South Africa, adding Zimbabwe needs to boost production and export. Disturbing the remaining commercial farmers' operations will also affect the economy, he said. Matanuska, a private firm from Malaysia, assisted Chipinge district farmers on an outgrower program to plant a 60-hectare banana crop, which they say has improved their livelihoods of at least 500 families. The families have since 2009 been growing bananas for the Malaysian company, which then exports to meet growing foreign demand. Mshowe said it would be wise for commercial farmers to help their black counterparts grow through technical expertise and in the process ensuring their produce also finds its way onto the international markets.
We'll be calling on them to make sure they help new farmers and villagers, especially those around here producing milk. Otherwise, they will lose their land. Of course, we will lose the milk, but they will also lose the land. We want to share knowledge with our people.
Working together, he said, would ensure the commercial farmers get to keep their land. Mshowe also appealed to non-governmental organizations to chip in and assist communal farmers to grow good quality crops for the export market. Mshowe said Zimbabwean farming could grow if farmers with the ability and expertise worked well with the new black farmers, adding those who do not heed this call may live to regret not assisting neighboring communities.
Those who work well with us and our people in the small-scale farming areas and the communal areas, then we have somewhere to start from. Those who do not want to empower others cannot have any guarantees whatsoever.
Matanuska, in partnership with the Zimbabwe Aid, has also resuscitated the two communities' derelict irrigation schemes that had been destroyed by Cyclone Eline in 2000. This allowed the banana project to come to fruition. Currently, over 60 hectares of land is under banana production in both communities, and the farmers are harvesting 60 tons of banana from each hectare every 9 months for the export market. The farmers working on the project say they are living better lives now, finding it easy to pay school fees, build better houses, and related needs. Matthias Jokwe, a beneficiary, says they harvest after every 9 months and get an average of $2,500 per farmer. Adding to date, they have had 3 harvests. Another beneficiary, Agnes Piri, says now she can afford doing things she never could afford before the banana project. Matanuska Project's manager, Johannes Makurumidze, said the company intends to empower more farmers by expanding their banana producing capacity. Reporting for Studio 7 in Mtema, Chipinge West, this is Lweda Moyo.
Hi, my name is Jacqueline Muchenyuka Mugido. Please listen to the Women's Forum as I chat with marvelous Mutlanga Nyahuya. We are going to be talking about me being a celebrity makeup artist in Hollywood. And we're also going to be talking about the makeup line Vault Cosmetics that I have launched in Zimbabwe.
Coming up,
vendors say local authorities should not target them.
How about first a look at world and inter-regional news?
Ukraine President Petro Poroshenko addressed a joint session of the U.S. Congress today, calling his country's battle against Russian-backed separatists a fight for freedom, democracy, and the rule of law, and asking for greater U.S. support. Saying his country needs a strong modern army, Mr. Poroshenko said Ukraine needs non-lethal and lethal military aid. He asked Washington to give his country a special security status that would allow the highest level defense ties possible for a non-NATO member.
And at least 2,622 people have died in the worst outbreak of Ebola virus in history, which has so far infected at least 5,335 people in West Africa, the World Health Organization said today. The WHO said more than 700 more Ebola cases emerged in West Africa in 1 week, a statistic that shows that the outbreak is accelerating. Just 3 weeks ago, the number of new cases was around 500 for a one-week period.
You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington, D.C.
The National Vendors Union of Zimbabwe will tomorrow meet with Transparency International Zimbabwe and the Combined Harare Residents Association over the demolition of vendor stores by the Harare City Council. The city of Harare says the structures were illegal, but the vendors and the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights are arguing the city council should first have issued an enforcement order before demolishing their stores. The order would have given the affected vendors at least 30 days' notice to move or pull down their structures. Most vendors say the cleanup exercise has reminded them of the 2005 Operation Murambatrina or cleanup filth, but this time it will leave thousands of people jobless in a struggling economy. For perspective, a reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke with Harare Councillor Peter Moyo of Ward 8 and National Vendors Union of Zimbabwe Director Samuel Wadzai. Wadzai says that the local authority should not continue to target vendors who are struggling to make a living.
We are very clear. We are saying that the demolitions are not only barbaric, but very against the Constitution of Zimbabwe. Constitution of Zimbabwe, Section 13.1, is very clear about the responsibility of the government to ensure that its citizens have all the resources necessary to ensure that they are able to do businesses that will look after their families. What we saw last week at the 4th Street Bus Terminal, cannot be allowed to continue without being challenged.
Councillor Moyo, your take on the current issue between the city council and vendors in Harare?
Well, I think first and foremost, I'm on record, even during our full council meetings, defending the vendors who are selling their wares in town. Why are we saying that? Because the unemployment rate in this country is so appalling. So we are saying to the vendors, they must get organized. After getting organized, they come to the city of Harare, get registered, and then their members will continue to pay. However, I also condemn the way things were done. I was also shocked because I saw it on television. We did not give authority as a local authority, as a council. We did not sanction such action. It was done by the officials. However, we don't want to turn our city into something else.
Mr. Wadzai, what's your reaction to what Councillor Moyo is saying? But also, there's the issue of tax that has been imposed by the council, which requires vendors to pay $1 daily.
Yeah, well, as a union, we are not necessarily against the issue of vendors paying taxes, but we are against the manner in which it is being implemented. It is full of loopholes and corrupt elements within the city of Harare are taking advantage of that to defraud our members. We are saying, as a union, we have got a database of vendors within the CBD area of Harare, and we are ready to share with the city of Harare that database. And the database, what is it talking about? It is spelling out who is at which street, who is selling what, and the profits that the vendors are making. So this database is going to assist us in determining the amount of taxes each vendor is supposed to pay. Let us not use a blanket fee here. We are going to have a problem because our vendors don't realize the same profit. So that database should be the starting point. We need to share with them the database that we have. I want to thank Councillor Moyo for the opportunity that he has presented us to come and share what we have with the city of Harare.
Mr. Moyo, as you are hearing that the vendors themselves say they are willing and able to come to the table, but there are still many who are yet to be registered as the city council has called for. What is the way forward in regards to this issue in your view?
The way forward is just like what he said, that they went to the mayor's office to make sure that they regularize everything. For those who are not members, I think it's upon them to conscientize those people who are not members to join them. If they join them, then we are able to say we have got such a number. For such a number, we're going to put them in such a place. I think if they do that, it will go a long way in our trying to assist. We also condemn some of the open space barons who went into the city and tried to take cash from the people who are already suffering. So we call upon the unions to refuse that, to reject that. They should not get abused by any citizen. We are all equal. We are all equal before the law. We will protect those people who want to do business in a proper manner.
That was Harare Councillor Peter Moyo of Ward 8. You also heard the views of National Vendors Union of Zimbabwe Director Samuel Wadzai. They spoke with Tatenda Gumbo.
Voting has closed in Scotland for a historic referendum that will decide whether the country leaves its 307-year-old union with England and becomes an independent state. Turnout for the referendum was high, since more than 4.2 million people registered to vote, 97% of those eligible. Voters cast ballots at 2,600 polling stations across the country for either yes or no to the referendum question, should Scotland be an independent country? Recent polls put supporters of the union ahead by 4.5 percentage points. The anti-secession side has argued that a yes vote will damage Scotland's economy and disrupt life for everyone if the alliance England formed in 1707 is broken.
Zimbabwean-born Temba Moyo says the outcome of the Scottish vote does not affect him, as he is now a citizen of the United Kingdom. Moyo, who did not cast his vote due to work commitments, tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube his British passport entitles him to have access to Scotland, Britain and beyond.
in one hand, it's not a good thing, but in another hand, it's a good thing, because if somebody wants to be independent, you know, you ought to grant them. But I think overall, it's going to create problems for both the Scottish and the rest of the United Kingdom.
Now, for a Zimbabwean like you, I know that you've got roots in Zimbabwe. What's the impact of this on you?
For me, to be honest, at the moment, it's not very clear, right? It's not very clear in the sense that it's something new and nobody knows the future. Nobody knows what's going to happen. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I'm a skilled person. It won't really affect me.
So suppose Scotland is independent, can you still go to Scotland and come back to Britain?
Yes, yes, yes. I mean, it will be the same. I presume it will be the same sort of scenario as when I leave the UK going to France, when I travel to France. You know, it's just like an independent country. So I would be able to go to Scotland and visit or for work to go and do business there.
That was structural engineer Temba Moyo, a Zimbabwean born, living in London. He spoke with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube.
And right now we get into the mailbag, and we have quite a lot of mail today as usual. And the first one is from Tonderai, who says, "Thanks guys, this edition of Good News Broadcasting, only Studio 7 at the heart of everyone in Zimbabwe, even ZANU-PF followers."
And we have another email from Mfararikwa Ward 16. You have fought a good fight in the Zimbabwe media, as we know, the Shibakera team, and it's Wondo Eminda. Thank you all, the staff. I wish you all the best. I want you to teach the Zimbabwe radio and TV staff how to save the nation. Greetings to the following families: Cheure family, Makaya, Matika, Chipiro, Ngwenya, Munyada, Mchaembera, Dimbare, Sunguro, Tongoona, Korito, and all that know Setri Makaya in Chipiro, Mafararikwa Marange Bocha. Please may your staff also cover Mafararikwa Ward 16.
And then we have another one that reads, "May you please help us to find our hidden treasure. Following the resettlement started by the government, Chief Mazetese of Mwenezi applied to go back to Insiza District, Fort Rickson area, where he was evicted by the whites in 1947 or 1950. He held several meetings with Insiza stakeholders. These include the Da, Mangube, NK, Kuchokaya, and Rulanga, and the former governor, Angelina Masuku. Muzatse was allowed to tour the land of his fathers and even visited their graveyards. All went well. Both the governor and the DA told Chief Masetse that he was most welcome." And it goes on and on, Sandy. It's quite a long one, and it's from Sakuvana.
And the next one, Chris, we want news concerning Bundesliga, English Premier League, and the La Liga. I'm Vincent from Mount Darwin, and I'll be happy if my letter is read when AM.
And we have the other one that reads, "My name is Blessing Mutsumba from Chimanimani. I'm very happy about Sandra, how she handles the job. Keep it up, Sandra."
Thank you, Blessing. I'll try as much as possible. Unfortunately, Chris, time is not on our side. Let us recap today's top stories.
Yes, and in our top stories today, the European Union Court of Justice throws out a complaint by former deputy minister and businessman Agai Georgias against the European Union targeted sanctions.
A top official of the MDCT is confirmed as one of the more than 80 people who died when a hostel of the Synagogue Church of All Nations, led by TB Joshua, collapsed in Nigeria on Friday.
And vendors say local authorities should stop targeting them as they struggle to make ends meet.
That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Standekile and Chris. This is Sandra Nyaira in Washington.
And I'm Chris Gande, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night. And remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk, where today is the Women's Roundtable.